Hey guys, coming up on Sports Spectrum today, Jay Jacobs is our guest. He is a former Florida Gator, Auburn Tiger executive. He was the athletic director with Auburn University for 15 years in 2005 to 2018. He was with Florida recently, the Florida Gators, as the executive associate athletics director for external affairs. It's a fancy title, but he was working basically as an AD, as an athletic director, for the last 5 years, and then ultimately decided to say, you know what, it's time to move on. It's time to retire from this job. And Jay, I don't know, I met him back in June at a conference, a Christians Working in Sports conference, and I was just so impressed in talking to him. I felt like there was a lot of wisdom there. And just spending some time with him, I said, you know what, I need to have him on this podcast and tell his story. So I think you're going to really love it. Jay was a part of Auburn University in that 2010 season when they won the BCS National Championship, Cam Newton at the quarterback position, Gene Chizik as the head coach. So Jay's seen a lot of success on the field, but ultimately it's what are you doing off the field? There's some great conversation here about handling adversity, making life decisions, doing kingdom work. Even foster parenting is something that Jay and his wife have had a heart for. Jay also played college football at Auburn and was blocking for none other than Bo Jackson. So of course we talked about Bo Jackson. And what does Bo know, right? Bo knows everything. If you grew up in the 80s, Bo Jackson was the guy. Jay Jacobs blocked for Bo Jackson in college at Auburn. Lots of great conversation here with Jay. First, quickly want to tell you about our Sports Spectrum magazine and remind you that you can get 15% off a one-year subscription exclusive to people who listen to this podcast. If you go to sportspectrum.com right now, sportspectrum.com, click the magazine icon, subscribe to the best thing that we do here, I think, the magazine, subscribe to a one-year subscription, put in the code podcast15, podcast15, and save 15% off a one-year subscription to the Sports Spectrum magazine. It's great content, perfect for the kids that love Jesus, love sports. It's clean content. It's got devotionals. It's got the gospel. It's got great stories, great pictures, great design. Check out the Sports Spectrum magazine over at sportsspectrum.com. And we're also presented today by our friends at Operation Christmas Child. They've been reaching millions of children each year with the good news of Jesus Christ simply by using shoebox gifts. Since 1993, 30 years, more than 209 million children in over 170 countries and territories have received a shoebox gift. Anyone can pack a shoebox and help send joy to a child in need with our friends at Operation Christmas Child. You can pack a shoebox with fun toys, school supplies, personal care items, bring it to a drop-off location during the National Collection Week. Now, that's coming up November 13th through the 20th, so you still have time. You can even build a shoebox online. We do it with our family. It's a lot of fun. I think you guys will love participating with Operation Christmas Child. And think about this. The good news of Jesus Christ is shared alongside your gift, and each child is invited to join a discipleship program. So learn how to pack a shoebox, view gift suggestions, and find your nearest drop-off location by visiting samaritanspurse.org/OCC. samaritanspurse.org/OCC with Operation Christmas Child. Jay Jacobs, formerly with Auburn, formerly with Florida, and now he's with Sports Spectrum here today joining us on the show. Hi, Jay. How are you?
Hey, Jason. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. Hope everything is, hope the weather is nice in Connecticut. It's a little toasty down here in Florida right now.
Yeah, Connecticut's hanging in there. Connecticut is hit or miss around this time of year, but we're in the hit stage today, which is a good thing. I got to start with this retirement. You know, you recently retired from Florida. Finished up a long career, both with Auburn and then eventually with Florida, received a ton of success, if you will, and now a lot of accolades as well, both at your time in Auburn and recently with Florida. But how's it feel, that word retirement? When I put that word in air quotes, of course, that you're retired, but how's it feel to kind of now be removed from it a little bit and looking back?
It is quite frankly, it's an odd feeling right now.
Yeah.
It's only been a short while since I haven't worked, and I'm trying to. My wife Angie and I both are trying to adjust to this new, I guess, new normal, as the cliche is. But I don't know. I'm going to do something. It's just going to be part time. It's not going to be an 8 to 5 and working for somebody else. I'm going to do some things on my own with some other people that I select to do. But to answer your question, Jason, I don't know how it feels. I don't feel like I'm retired.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not working full time for anyone right now. And so that is a great feeling, to be quite honest with you. It's a great feeling thinking about, you know, what else is it that, you know, that maybe that I could do? You know, what else can we do professionally? What else can we do kingdom work? What else can I do with my family, my 3 daughters? So anyway, I hadn't quite gotten to the retired piece yet. I've just gotten to a piece where, okay, things are going to be different, and it's sort of freak.
Yeah, it's the next season of life, as I hear a lot of people say. It's, you know, life is a bunch of different seasons. What was it that went into the decision to know that God was kind of guiding you towards this decision to say, okay, my time with Florida is up, and it's on to the next season?
There were a lot of little things going through, Jason. Events that I had no control over, like the loss of a dear friend a couple of years ago at an early age, what I consider to be early age. He's my age.
Yeah.
Being, you know, physically a little bit of a distance from our 3 daughters. And also, just taking a step back and giving somebody else the opportunity that someone once gave me. Somebody moved on, and it created a vacancy, so it gave me an opportunity to be promoted and get more responsibility. And also, Jason, part of what went into it was, you know, what is it that, how can we use what we have and who we know to increase his kingdom? So it wasn't like this aha moment. It wasn't like I woke up one day, that's what we're going to do. Angie and I have been praying about it for a few years, and it just seemed like now's the right time. And I like the idea of completing 5 years at Florida. So I actually went 2 days past 5 years at Florida, yeah, which was significant to me.
Yeah, it's a nice little closure number, if you will, to kind of walk away from. You talk about kingdom work. I know a lot of what you've done has been always focused with the Lord at the center. What are some of the things kingdom work-wise that you saw taking shape when you were still working with Florida, even with Auburn maybe, that now could manifest itself a little bit more from a kingdom perspective?
Hey, I'd like to approach that maybe 2 different ways, Jason, as you asked the question. One is that I failed miserably, but each day I tried to do kingdom work, you know, for myself, for my family, for my coworkers, for my friends. I wasn't always successful doing that because of the own sin in my life and the distractions of life and just the noise of life. You get off course. You wake up in the morning, you think, okay, what can I do today to increase the kingdom in the current role that I'm in? And, you know, in 15 minutes, something completely changes it. And I forgot about it until the next morning. The second piece, though, is that, we started a couple of ministries. They're really in the infancy stages. In Gainesville, we started this once a month get together for business people in Gainesville called Business by the Book. The late author John Gordon wrote a book. Larry Burkett, not John Gordon.
Yeah.
Larry Burkett wrote a book entitled Business by the Book, and Larry talked about doing business on biblical principles. So this past year in Gainesville, a group of us started Business by the Book. The first Wednesday of every month, we have a speaker come in from the local community and just pour into business people. Hmm. So, some things like that. My wife has been a guardian ad litem in Gainesville. We were foster parents before in Alabama. She became a guardian ad litem here. And so she's come alongside some people to help them that couldn't help themselves. And so that type of ministry work, a dear friend has a ministry, and Angie's on the board now where they're building orphanages in Mexico. So, Jason, all that means, I don't know. It's just that we're trying to be open to, you know, how can we lead ourselves? How can we lead our family? And how can we lead others in a Christ-like way?
Yeah. He is Jay Jacobs, formerly with Auburn. He was their athletic director there, with the Florida Gators, executive associate athletics director for external affairs. Now free agent, we'll say, Jay Jacobs, joining us here on Sports Spectrum. So going back a bit, knowing that you spent 15 years at Auburn as their athletic director, your connection, though, as I was reading, goes much further back. I didn't realize that you played football there, but you were a fan of Auburn kind of growing up as a kid, right?
Oh, yeah. The way that, my parents, we couldn't afford to buy tickets. So when I learned that the Boy Scouts got to go usher at Auburn, I immediately became a Boy Scout. And it's terrible, but it's true. Jason, that's what I wanted to do. So I became a Boy Scout, and every Saturday we got to go over to the football stadium there in Auburn and be ushers. And that's when I got to see my first Auburn football games. And at the time, we lived in a divided home. My mother was an Alabama fan.
Oh.
And my dad went to Auburn. And in November growing up, it was always brutal around Thanksgiving. And anyway, she quickly, when I walked on at Auburn, she quickly changed, and she's the biggest Auburn fan there is now. So, but anyway, so it does go back a ways.
Yeah. And then, so there's this dream that's instilled from the time you're a little kid, and there's processes here that lead you to, in many ways, probably think you were going to be a lifelong Auburn guy, even before you made the decision to go to Florida. So let's take us through this a little bit, because it's in the, late 70s, early 80s, when you have this opportunity to not just go to Auburn, but to actually walk on and make the football team. What was that process like for you?
Yeah, it was, Jason, it was really interesting, to say the least. I'd gone to Auburn. I went to junior college first, moved back to my hometown of Lafayette, Alabama, and started working for my grandfather, who was had a funeral home. So I thought I was going to be in the funeral business. And quite frankly, sometimes as ADs, you sort of felt like you were.
Yes,
but anyway,
yes.
I was there for 6 months, went to junior college, and I knew that, you know, I wanted something else. So my sophomore year, I go to Auburn. And in my sophomore year, at the end of the first semester, they hired Pat Dye in December.
Of course.
And I'm just there. I joined a fraternity. And just hanging out and going nowhere fast. And in February, one afternoon, I just said, you know what, I'm going to walk on. So I got up, went over to the athletic department, which was in the Memorial Coliseum at the time. I said, I'm here to walk on. And they sent me back to this grumpy old guy who I dearly love now, named Wayne Hall, who was an All-American in Alabama. And he was the defensive line coach at Auburn. He was in charge of the winter workouts. They sent me back to his office, and he was watching film, Jason. He never turned the film projector off while he talked to me. He asked me what time I got out of school every day. He said, show up at this time, 2 o'clock every day, with tennis shoes, t-shirts, and shorts. He said, if you make it for 2 weeks, I'll give you Auburn tennis shoes, t-shirts, and shorts. If you make it for 2 weeks after that, I'll give you a locker to put them in. So I started living life 2 weeks at a time. And long story short is that it was such a dramatic change for some of those guys that had been there with the new coach. Way that Coach Dye came in and approached things, that it was such a shock to them that a lot of them decided to leave. And when they did, it gave me an opportunity to have a chance to play a lot more than my ability should have allowed me to. But I was all we had at the time. So
I was going to say, you're a walk-on, right? So are you getting in games and playing, though? A lot of walk-ons usually are guys that are, you know, third, fourth on the depth chart type of situation.
Right. Well, going into my junior year, I was third on the depth chart, starting two-a-days. So we practiced that morning. We've been through three-a-days already. We practiced that morning, which I guess was the fourth day, Jason. We practiced that morning. That afternoon, the number one tackle, he quit before practice. The number two tackle, who's a dear friend of mine, he was finishing a class in South Alabama because he was doing engineering and agriculture, I believe it was. So he wasn't there. So all of a sudden, the first day of two-a-days, I'm the number one left tackle. And so I got to start seven or eight games my junior year and the same my senior year. So it's just amazing how it's amazing how it worked out. But I was just very fortunate and I worked hard.
You're an offensive lineman, right?
Right.
So you're blocking for the running game. And I presume, I was just doing my math, I didn't even ask you this before we started, that you were blocking for Bo Jackson. Is that accurate?
Yes, exactly. So we ran the wishbone. For those listeners, know that we ran the wishbone. And so Bo was the right halfback. So anytime Bo ran, he ran left, unless it was some type of reverse or something. So he always ran to my side, which had a lot to do with me being able to play.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I didn't weigh but 235 pounds and one of the lightest offensive linemen in the SEC. And but I was able to get out of Bo's way.
Right. So he was basically 230 pounds when he was running the ball himself, right?
He was.
What was that like to be around him? I can imagine just being around a Bo Jackson. You know, he's a Heisman Trophy winner, obviously. And I think he might be the greatest athlete that's been around since I've been alive. I'll be 50 years old this year. What was it like to kind of be in those early stages of watching him grow and develop into this incredible athlete?
Oh, it was incredible.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about it is, Jason, is that at that age, everybody thinks they're really good.
Yeah.
But he was completely different. You know, you may recall, or our listeners may recall that Bo got drafted by the Yankees out of high school to mm-hmm. play baseball. And I'll never forget, sitting at lunch table, what are you doing here? You could be playing baseball. And because we knew what it was like, what Coach Dye had done. I mean, it is hard. And he said, I wanted to prove to people I could do both. And here he is, you know, 18 years old telling us that. Well, you know, the rest of his life, that's all he did. He was a phenomenal athlete and a really good person and three wonderful children, his wife, Linda. He gave us a chance to win.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, he gave us a chance to win and he was a great teammate.
Yeah. That's what you want, right? Like you want a great player right. and you want him to be a great teammate as well. Do you have a favorite story, whether it was in a game, in a moment with Bo or on the sidelines or at a practice that you can share with our audience?
Yeah, one that that sort of stunned us all is that on Friday nights, all the coaches were out recruiting on Friday before a home ball game on Saturday, and Coach Dye would be the only one that would meet with us. And so on this particular Friday night, we met in the stadium, and we were there just in warm-ups. You know, we're just going to walk through, you know, special teams, first offense, second, you know, those type of things, Jason. And so there was a 3-foot chain link fence between the seats and the field. And so we're all the seats in the stands. And Coach Dye said, okay, let's everybody come over here to the field. Well, we all walked through the gate. Well, Bo walked up to the fence and didn't take a step, just flat-footed jumped over it. So we said, all right, this guy's got a different thing going on than the rest of us do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then in the 1982, it was the last Tangerine Bowl. We were playing Boston College, and Randy Campbell, our quarterback, the offensive coordinator, is telling Randy all these things at one of our, I guess, probably our final timeout. And they start to break up the huddle on the sideline, and Coach Dye grabs Randy right in the chest and pulls him to him. He says, I don't care what you read. You pitch that ball to Bo. It didn't matter what the tackle or the end did. You pitch it to Bo. That's what Randy did. And there's a highlight film of Bo having to reach back behind him to catch the pitch and scoring against Boston College to seal our win there. So, you know, he's just phenomenal.
Yeah, it reminds me of, I think it was either the Larry Bird or Michael Jordan moment in the 80s or early 90s when somebody said, what do we do? What's the play? And he said, give it to Larry and get the heck out of the way, you know, and let him do his thing.
Right.
I feel like that's a Bo Jackson deal. Like, just give it to Bo and let him do his thing.
Exactly. And the same thing happened in 82 against Alabama. We ran 43 over the top. Just give it to Bo, and Bo just jumped the whole pile. And he's just an unbelievable athlete and even a better person, even a better dad and husband. He's outstanding. To me too. So I was visiting with my soon to be son-in-law, and he asked me, said, you know, what great athlete would you like to have seen in person? I said, Muhammad Ali. And he said, you know, a lot of my friends say Bo, because, you know, some of them didn't get to see him in person.
Sure.
But he is one of those guys, and he may be the only guy that can do everything that he did, track wise, football wise, and baseball wise.
I mean, and it's sad because, you know, I was in high school when he got hurt in that game with the Raiders in the playoffs. I think it was against the Bengals. And ultimately, he came back and played a little bit with the White Sox. He wasn't the same with the hip and never played football again. But you always kind of wonder what if. Because at that time, I think he was 28 years old, maybe 27 years old. And you kind of wonder, man, what if he never got hurt? Like, because we see a guy like Shohei Ohtani today, right, in baseball, and he's pitching and he's hitting, and you're like, okay, we've never seen that. And you saw a little bit of that with Deion Sanders, you know, in the 90s, where you saw a guy who was, you know, a base threat, you know, stealing bases and kind of getting on base and playing baseball and then dominating a Hall of Famer in football. But we never really got to see that. We saw it a little bit with Bo in 89 when he was with the Royals and they went to the All-Star game and he won the All-Star game MVP. And then he goes to the Pro Bowl with the Raiders, but you never got to see it fully manifest itself. And I don't know. To me, he's one of the great what if stories if he didn't get hurt. Not what if was he great. He was great. But just if he hadn't gotten hurt, what would that have looked like?
Who knows? Because he was, when he was healthy, he's the best I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. You're not alone in that. So many people have said that he's probably the best athlete that's, you know, that we've seen in the last 45, 50 years for sure. Because of the way he was able to do it on both ends. Well, Jay, I think it's been interesting to kind of take you through football. And then ultimately you have this opportunity to become, you know, athletic director of Auburn. And that's a few years down the road. But when you're in this role, and you guys won a national championship in football in 2010. That was the Gene Chizik, Cam Newton year. I remember following that very closely during my time at ESPN. But when you're in a role like this, walk me through. It feels like you're living a dream in some ways, right? You're an athletic director for the school that you idolized and rooted for since you were a little kid. But you're also in a really tough job. Like you just described, some days it feels like a funeral because you have to hire and fire people and let them go and make changes. And it's in many ways, it can be a thankless job, at least it feels like from outside looking in. What were some of those challenges that you felt as you're doing this job and still trying to rely on the Lord to kind of guide you and steer you through what can be very difficult in a position as an athletic director?
Yeah, it can be. And I think that, you know, some people handle it a lot better than I did. I don't think that I handle it very well sometimes. I don't think I ever stopped and smelled roses. And I don't think it is. I don't think it's because it was my school, Auburn. I think it's because of how I'm built that, you know, as we went through in talking about the 2010 season, as we went through that season, every game we won wasn't like, this is great. It was like a relief.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, particularly after we came from behind and beat Kentucky up there going 99 yards, kicking a field goal, we all of a sudden started thinking about, okay, this could be a real special team. But, you know, what I would, you know, I wouldn't want to go back and change anything because it could change some really, really positive things. But, you know, I think sometimes we all get too caught up in what we're doing. Hmm. I don't think we stop and smell the roses enough. But when you're in that, when I was in that role, I was just continually grinding, trying to find a way to keep it going and keep other sports going and those type of things. But I also think that was my job.
Yeah.
So, but now it's interesting, you know, particularly the last few years, we've moved a couple of times and I've had a chance to look through some stuff that I kept. And it's made me just think a little bit, Jason, about, man, that was pretty cool. And then in 2013, with Gus, I think about, man, we were only like a minute and a half away from winning a second national championship.
Sure.
And that starts bothering me. You know, I mean, it's, but, you know, going back to my faith piece, you know, I don't know how I could have done it. without knowing that Jesus Christ was my Lord and Savior, and he had my back. He was my paraclete. He had my back. The Roman soldiers had paracletes, or soldiers that fought at their back. And the Holy Spirit had my back. And, when I became the AD in January of 05, I often thought, how am I going to be a Christian in this role? Well, it wasn't long after that that I thought, how can you be in this role and not be a Christian? And because, man, it is ever changing, and a lot of things come into play, a lot of noise gets in the system, and you can lose your foundation so quickly. But knowing that, that I've been, forgiven, bought, and saved by somebody walking this earth 2,000 years ago, my faith is sealed. It gives you a peace about, okay, I'm just going to do what I think's right. And there you go. But a lot of, back to your point about athletics, a lot of fun stuff. Don't misunderstand me at all. Don't misunderstand. I loved all of it. I loved all of it. I mean, I didn't necessarily like having to make changes, but when I saw that there had to be a change, I just thought that, you know what? We're a steward of this athletics department. We're supposed to represent what is best for these student athletes. And so here we go. And one thing that I sort of learned from myself for myself is that, you know what? I don't fire anybody. Everybody fires themselves. Either they get it done or they don't, just like with me. Just like me at Auburn. The time came to an end, and it was accumulation of a lot of different decisions that I'd made, and it was time to make a change. And there is nothing in the world wrong with that. As long as I could go home every day and look at my three daughters and any foster children and my wife that we had in the house and know that I did what I thought was right with Jesus Christ as my Savior and integrity, then it didn't really matter to me how it all turned out. So.
Well, you've mentioned foster children a couple times, and I just thought, this wasn't in my notes or anything, but there clearly is a heart for foster parenting that you and your wife had, maybe still have. Where'd that come from? Talk us and walk us through that.
Like all good things in my life, it came from my wife.
That's
I,
right.
include, in all seriousness, including my salvation. Until, I grew up in the church, but once I went to college, I never went to church. And then we got married, and we went right back to church, and I rededicated my life in 1993, Lord Savior Jesus Christ, after we got married in 1989. That's all because of Angie. But she saw something in dear friends of ours, a local pediatrician in Auburn, Dr. David and his wife Debbie Smalley. They were fostering, and it just hit Angie right in the heart. And so we got licensed, and we fostered for about 10 years. And for those that have a desire to do that or think they might, there's a lot of ways you can get involved in fostering. You can do something called respite care, which means that when a foster family goes out of town or wants to go on a date night, you could keep the foster children for that evening or for a weekend. So you don't have to jump in the deep end. But there is a terrible need for foster parents. What a terrible crime, Jason, it is for an adult to do something they shouldn't do, and the child is ripped out of their mom's arms and put with a stranger. No justice system in the world would allow for that. But that's what goes on to protect the child. But the child being pulled out of their home, being pulled away from their mother or their grandmother or their dad or whomever it may be, and said, you got to go over here and live because your mother did something wrong or your dad said something wrong. Boy, that just doesn't seem fair. So there's a need for Christians and people to be foster parents, a respite care or backup care providers. So that's where we are. We moved to Florida. We didn't get licensed in Florida for foster care. Angie got licensed to be a guardian ad litem, which means that she keeps up with she's assigned a couple of foster children. And so when they go to court, she's there with them. So she can speak to the judge and the attorneys about what has been going on in the home with the foster parent, how the child feels. So she's like a neutral party, so to speak. Probably doing a terrible job explaining this. She's like a neutral party as an advocate for the child when there's a legal decision has to be made.
No, that's wonderful. I think it takes some special people. I know some people at my church, the Grays, who have fostered in the past, and I see a heart for the Lord, and a heart to be the hands and feet of Jesus when you're talking about these children. And in many ways, looking at us with God, right? He adopts us into his kingdom. I don't know. There's just a special place, I think, in heaven for people who foster parent. That's just my thinking, Jay.
Well, I tell you, it's a tough thing to do. We had two little girls for a couple of years, and I'll never forget when we told them, we have three daughters of our own.
Yeah.
We told those two little girls that you're going home with mama. They're all bouncing around screaming, yeah, yeah, yeah. My three girls are over there bawling, crying, because the two girls are going to go come out of our house and they fall in love with them as sisters. But there's no doubt about it. There's a lot of opportunities to do mission work right here in your own community. So anyway, how we got there is because Angie saw that in someone else. Somebody else was a bright light, Debbie Smalley, and Angie saw that and it lit Angie up. And so that's how we came to be foster parents.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Last couple questions here with Jay Jacobs on Sports Spectrum. Proverbs 29:26. That is, I'm going to read this. Many seek an audience with a ruler, but it is from the Lord that one gets justice. And that's the verse on your Twitter page or your X page or whatever it's called now. But why that verse? Why Proverbs 29:26?
All right. First off, now, Jason, I've tried to make it clear, you know, I'm no theologian and I'm as a sinful person as there is around.
Yes. But you and me both.
For those of you that may recall, years ago, we used to have on our desk a calendar. And on that calendar, it was a flip calendar. So each day had a different, it showed the date and had a verse on it.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing that and I'm reading them and I'm okay. You know, so it was just a little bit of a seed for me. You know, I may read it and forget it within 2 minutes, you know, but this verse about 25 years ago, it just stuck with me. And I think, Jason, the reason it stuck with me is because my personality is a people pleaser.
Yeah.
I want everybody to like what I've said, what I've done, what I've decided for them. And that's unrealistic. And so Jesus put that verse in front of me on that particular day. And I actually said it in my press conference prior to becoming AD, just so that I could, just to reinforce it in my own soul. Is that, you know what, everybody's going to be pulling on me, want me to do this and that, and I may want to do that, but all that matters is my judgment before him. So that's where it came from. So when you started reading, I'm thinking, how in the world does he know that is the one verse of all the verses in the Bible I have memorized? But anyway, that's what I try to live by each day.
No, I think it's a great verse and a great reminder, right? Like that, you know, we can all seek an audience with all the different people we want, whether it's our jobs or our family or our friends or our church, but it's ultimately the Lord that's going to be the judge of our lives. And so we should seek an audience. That's why I love that line, audience of one, because that's been adopted by a bunch of, you know, athletes and different people that they want to play for an audience of one. But that's really life. Like, that's what it's about, is it doesn't matter about all these other things. If God isn't first in our life and then we're not playing for him, we have our orders mixed up, Jay.
There's no doubt about it, Jason. And, you know, just knowing that verse helps me. Now, that please understand, I failed miserably several times with that, a bunch of times. But just knowing that, you know what, at the end of the day, I'm gonna be standing in front of him, and he's not going to be asking me what other people thought.
Right.
He's only going to be, you know, he's only going to be judging me on what he thinks.
Yes.
And so at the end of the day, that's all that matters. That is all that matters. All this other stuff, you know, who wins ball games, who, you know, all these different things doesn't matter. Just when the dust settles, I'm going to be standing there and it's going to be either eternal life or it's going to be really, really bad. And so I'm just trying to make sure that I show up and he says, hey, you did a good job, man.
Yeah. That's all that matters. That's what I'm hoping for too. Last question for you, buddy. Encouragement for our audience. I think a lot of our audience struggles with, how do they live out their faith? And I'm not saying you were perfect at it, but you've done it for a long time, that I think you have some encouragement maybe that you could share with our audience, maybe some advice to give to those that are trying to live out their faith the best way they possibly can in their specific sphere of influence. I get this question a lot about my time at ESPN. What was it like to be a believer at ESPN? And it wasn't easy, and I certainly wasn't perfect at it. But for you, you had to do that in a very public setting for some pretty prestigious universities for many years. What encouragement would you have for our audiences as we wind down here for them to live out their faith the best way they possibly can in their sphere of influence?
Yeah, just make sure that your faith is bigger than anything else. Just make sure when you walk into work, into a meeting, into a situation, just take a second and just make sure your faith is with you.
Yeah.
Okay? Because here's the thing, Jason, that I've learned and I'm learning is that you know, there's a song that says they'll know your Christians by your love.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it is in your language and what you say and what you do that people say there's something different about them. It's not quoting Proverbs 29:26. It is because of the values, the Christian values that you have in your life. So be the Christian that God called you to be. But just know this, that what you're going through, everybody goes through. You know, I'm reading John and Acts right now, and those guys that walk with Jesus every day are failing.
Yeah.
They were with him every day, but they always come back. So just keep coming back. Don't beat yourself up. That's the devil trying to pull you back into the sewer. But you just be you be a Christian right where you are, and know that when you go home every day and you, your family, whatever it may be, that they know who you represent and whose you are. And we don't have to overcomplicate it. We don't have to overthink it. Just be a Christian by your love, by what you say, what you do. Just make sure that your words and your deeds match up.
Yeah, that's so important. He is Jay Jacobs. Thanks for those encouraging words, Jay. And thanks for coming on the show. It's always good to see you. And I know this won't be the last time we talk, but I'm just grateful that you shared a little bit of your story with us on Sports Spectrum. Thanks for coming on the show.
Jason, it's been a pleasure. Hey, I want to tell you, you know, on a lot of believers and non-believers, we appreciate what you're doing. We do. We appreciate, you know, you stepping into this new season in your life and doing these podcasts and what you're doing for the kingdom. I think we need it now more than we've ever needed it before. And I think we've got a bigger microphone than we've ever had before. So thank you, my friend. It's been a blessing being a part of it. And I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, buddy. All the best.
All right. God bless.
And many thanks to Jay Jacobs with Florida, with Auburn. I just appreciate Jay coming on Sports Spectrum. There's a lot to unpack there. I hope you were taking some notes. I mean, the kingdom work that he desires to do. The stories about Bo Jackson were just phenomenal. How about handling adversity and making tough life decisions, even foster parenting and having a heart to adopt and foster those children in need? How about living your faith out in the workplace and what Jay talked about at the end there? That is a question I get asked about a lot. I've spoken at churches and conferences and men's gatherings about this specific topic, about living your faith out in the workplace quite a bit. And it's a passion for mine. I felt like Jay was the perfect guest to ask that question to as well. He was phenomenal and just grateful that he joined us here today on Sports Spectrum. We are thankful to you as well for tuning in. You guys are the reason we do this show. Ultimately, that you can listen, you can be encouraged, you can hear Jesus in the sports conversation, and then hopefully share this with others. That's really the best way to be an ambassador for Sports Spectrum, is to share the podcast with others, share our articles and content that we put out, even our Instagrams or, you know, our Facebook or our Twitter feeds or whatever it is, you know, sharing those with other people and letting them know about Sports Spectrum is the best way to let them, you know about that we exist and to be an ambassador for us. And that helps get the word out. Ultimately, we want to see the gospel reaching the nations. That's the goal, right? To share the gospel. We just use sports as a way to do that. So check out sportsspectrum.com, stay in touch with our content, and then share with someone about maybe this interview or anything that we have going on at Sports Spectrum. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter, which is at sportsspectrum.com. I mentioned the magazine at the top. You can subscribe to our Sports Spectrum magazine as well. We thank you. We love you guys. And we'll see you next time with a brand new episode right here on Sports Spectrum. Have a great rest of your day.